Broadcasting live from Studio 1A in Brooklyn, New York. This is Empire State Reptiles Live, specializing in connecting breeders and fans worldwide. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Empire State Reptiles Live. My name is Chris, and I am back here with you guys. I'm so happy to be back. I know that I've been gone for about 2 weeks, well, actually 3 weeks now. Last week, I had to take care of some personal business, and the week before the last, Morgan covered me while I had to go to a party that I totally forgot about. And of course, knowing me, I scheduled a show for that day, so he had my back, and he took over, and I thank you for that. Now, I never really told you guys about this little idea I had, so I just kind of put it into motion, but we're continuing our amphibian series tonight with Stefania Foci of Instagram's The Dark Frog Queen. She has over 16,000 followers on Instagram, and her Instagram just includes her daily life and sharing her passion of amphibians, specifically poison dart frogs. So we will be sitting down and talking to her and getting a little bit of a scoop on the life of poison dart frogs. So I know we haven't had anything like that on the show, so that should definitely be interesting, but I want to let you guys know that next week we will be having our culmination of our amphibian series with a huge guest on the show. I won't say who this person is now, but I will say that they have a whole entire company based off of amphibians. And most of you guys do know who this person is, but I'll save that for our Instagram and our text message reminders subscribers. Now, speaking about text message reminders, please don't forget that the best way to stay in tune with Empire State Reptiles Live, and when I mean stay in tune, is I mean know about our scheduling and any cancellations or additions or whatever you want to know about us, make sure you text ShowRemy at ShowRemy to 81010. Once again, that is ShowRemy. To 81010, and you will be connected to our text message reminder group. And make sure, you know, that sometimes we will be giving away some free gifts just for our text message reminder subscribers. So enough with me bickering and talking about whatever I'm talking about and me just doing whatever. I want to get into the show, and let's bring on Stefania so she can talk about her poison dart frogs. Good evening, Stefania. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm doing well as usual. So I want to jump right into it. So tell me a little about poison dart frogs. What makes them special and why do you love them so much?
All right. So poison dart frogs are a very specific niche in the hobby. They're really interesting because they're ornamental. They're not the kind of pet, if you will, that you can hold, but you still can interact with them in that they're very aware of their surroundings. So they're very nice to watch. They definitely, I have some that will ask for food and they watch me, you know, when I work in their enclosures. That's just the tip of the iceberg.
All right. Wow. So currently how many poison dart frogs do you house?
I have a couple hundred. I have about 30 different species of dart frogs, and they breed all the time, so it's really hard to get an exact number, but we can say around 200.
Wow, so what are the requirements that you set into place to maintain all these dart frogs? So what do you do specifically that helps ensure the survival rate of all your amphibians that you have?
They're not difficult, but their needs are very specific. As long as you provide a planted vivarium and you culture, so for dart frogs, you need to culture fruit flies. which is actually very simple. So as long as you have a planted vivarium, you culture for fruit flies every week, and you a daily misting, and they just need room temperature, and they don't really have any light requirements other than, you know, for plant growth. So they're pretty low maintenance once you have the vivarium built.
Oh, okay. So you started talking a little bit about vivariums. So how do you create a vivarium? Like, I know there's probably a specific way you like your vivariums to be, and so how do you go about doing that? What are some key steps or key ideas to building a perfect vivarium for the poison dart frog?
All right, so each species of dart frog is going to have a requirement for space. Some are more arboreal, so they're going to want taller enclosures. Some are more terrestrial, and they're going to want more floor space. So once you have the species chosen, then you can pick a size. And in order to have a bioactive vivarium, there's a couple layers of substrate. You have pretty much the false bottom at the very bottom, which is essentially to hold water in order to help the moisture level. Pretty much everything in the substrate, all of the layers are formulated exactly to maintain the high humidity that they need. So, you know, they're from the rainforest, so they need super high humidity. So you have that false bottom. And then you put a screen divider. Above that, you put ABG mix, which is short for Atlanta Botanical Gardens. They actually concocted a specific ratio for essentially the dirt of this bioactive vivarium. It's got several ingredients like charcoal and et cetera, but it's awesome dirt for vivariums. Above that, you put a small layer of sphagnum moss, and above that, you put leaf litter. So pretty much once you have all of these layers in place, your vivarium can last for years. Like, they recommend for you to change ABG mix out every 5 years, and that's only because of the charcoal and the toxins that it starts releasing after 5 years, you know. So it's not like reptiles where a lot of them need, you know, daily or weekly cleaning. With vivariums, all your cleaning is essentially the glass and the plant trimmings and stuff. So all of those substrates, once you have them set up, and then you're good to go.
All right. So you talked a little bit about cleaning. Well, you touched base on cleaning a little bit. So do you recommend any type of cleanup crews for your vivarium, such as, I know springtails, I haven't had any experience with them, but I know springtails might be something people might be interested in for cleanup.
Totally. So with bioactive vivariums, one of the things that makes them bioactive is the cleanup crew. Springtails are a super popular and easy to find cleanup crew. Also isopods, either and both. People, you know, everybody kind of does their own thing, but essentially they eat all of the decomposing matter. So any poop, any decomposing leaves, all of the above, they eat that. So they're actually really beneficial to have. And an added benefit is that the dart frogs will snack on them. So pretty much what you do is you buy a culture of either or both, springtails, isopods, or both. You dump them in and you let them go, you know. The dart frogs aren't going to be able to eat all of them. So the goal is for them to kind of make a colony inside the vivarium, and there's no problem with them coming out or anything. Like, once you put them in, there's no danger there. And they just kind of live happily inside, and you essentially create a little slice of rainforest, you know?
Wow, that's pretty cool. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you are new to the show or if this is your first time listening, I invite you to call into the show and get a little bit interactive. Let's mingle a little bit. The number is 713-955-0793. Once again, that is 713-955-0793. It might take you a couple of seconds to connect, but once you connect, I'll see you in my switchboard, and I'll make sure to get right to you. So I want to talk about, I guess you can call it a myth that people associate with the dart frogs, and that's obviously the poison part of them. And in your Instagram bio, you do have poison dart frogs are not poisonous in captivity. So how do you react to when people say poison dart frogs are poisonous when they're kept in captivity?
Well, it's actually one of the funnest parts. So poison dart frogs are not poisonous in captivity. The reason poison dart frogs are poisonous in their natural environment is due to their diet. So pretty much dart frogs in the wild eat these bugs that eat toxic plants, right? So the toxicity goes from these toxic plants in these lush rainforests to from the plants to the bugs and from the bugs to the frogs, right? So these frogs are ingesting bugs that essentially have toxins in them, and they their biology is pretty much set up to become toxic themselves as a defense mechanism, which is interesting in that it kind of gives them special rules in the animal world, because a dart frog can live up and beyond 15 years.
Okay.
And it takes them a year and a half to sexually mature. So being that in the wild they are poisonous, they have these special rules that make them really awesome. But in captivity, they eat fruit flies. You know, remember I mentioned earlier we culture fruit flies?
Of course.
So fruit flies are just, you know, fruit flies. They're line bred in order to be flightless. They do have wings, but they don't fly. So they're really easy to handle. And so in captivity, that's their main diet. So there's no toxicity there. So even if you were to get a wild caught dart frog within months of being on that fruit fly diet, they will actually lose their toxicity. So in captivity, they're not poisonous or dangerous at all anyway.
All right. So you talk, like you said, you touched base on the fruit fly aspect of the poison dart frog world. So how are you able to maintain obviously you have a huge culture of fruit flies for your huge collection of poison dart frogs. How are you able to maintain that? What goes into the upkeep and the maintenance of it?
All right. So culturing fruit flies, it's actually very simple. You need a deli cup, a vented lid, a fly culture media, which you can find a recipe for online, or you can actually buy pre-made media, and Excelsior, which is kind of a shredded wood, if you will. So what you do is you get your deli cup and the fly media, which is a powder. You mix it with some boiling water, puts a bunch, like a handful of Excelsior in, and you throw some flies in there. And within 2 weeks, that culture becomes a booming culture. A booming culture means that all the initial flies have procreated and have produced a couple hundred flies. And I culture 24 fly cultures a week for my several hundred frogs.
Wow.
So I did the math, and if you have between like 5 and 7 dart frogs, you only need to culture one per week. And it's very important to do it on a weekly basis. Keeping your schedule is super important because then it ensures that you never run out, because fly cultures have a lifespan. So on day one, you make that culture and you seed it with fresh parent flies, the way I call them. That culture has to sit for 2 weeks, right?
Okay.
At that 14-day mark, it's booming. It's produced.
Okay.
Now, that will only produce flies for 2 weeks. So after those 2 weeks are done, you have that, you know, 28-day cycle. That culture is dead, and you got to toss it. Some people will wash it or you can throw it away. If every single week you make how many ever cultures you need, you know, you can make one culture a week, whatever you need, depending on how many dart frogs you have, then you never run out and you never have to go through the stress of not having enough flies to feed your frogs, or, you know, having to pay a ton of money to order frogs or flies to, it's just a disaster. I mean, you know, but if you do it every week, it's pretty simple. It's pretty cost effective to buy supplies and stuff. And it's a lot simpler than it sounds.
Yeah, I assume that it is. But what is the biggest mistake that you see commonly that people make when getting into poison dart frogs in particular?
Probably the fruit flies. A lot of people will ask if they can live off of crickets, and the answer is no. Yeah, like pinhead crickets, you know? Pinheads are very bulky, or, you know, crickets in general have a very bulky exoskeleton, which is way too harsh for the digestive tract of dart frogs. So the main mistake people make is either not culturing their own fruit flies, not getting into a schedule, or, you know, kind of depending on somebody else, like a retailer, you know, or a pet shop, because you never know where in that time cycle that culture will be. So let's say you get a culture it was just made, then that's not going to be ready for 2 weeks. If your frogs are hungry, what are you going to do? So keeping on a schedule is pretty much the hardest but the best thing you can do if you keep dart frogs.
All right. So obviously with hundreds of specimens in your collection, you must have some type of system to maintain humidity. Now, we all know of all the big name misting systems out there like Mist King and all these other systems. So what do you recommend for somebody that wants to keep, let's say, multiple tanks of dart frogs? And how do you build your own misting system? Well, not build your own, but you get what I'm trying to get at.
I understand. I swear by my Mist Kings. Actually have over 80 enclosures, because I don't just keep dart frogs. I keep other species as well. So I kind of have species room in my rooms in my house. I have 4 to 5 species rooms, and each room has 1 to 2 Mist King systems set up, and they save my life. Or more like the hundreds of lives that live under my roof. You know?
Of course.
So pretty much these misting systems, Mist King in particular, has excellent, excellent quality. Like such excellent quality that it can run dry and the pump will still work, you know. It's a little pricey. It's definitely an investment, but I have never invested in a better thing, you know.
Wow. So, what do you recommend doing with your first Misting King system? I know that they come in different type of packages. So let's say, hypothetically speaking, somebody wants to have 10 specimens. Not sure how many tanks that would be, but let's say they have 10 specimens. What type of misting system do you recommend them getting?
So Mist King has 3 levels of systems. You have the small one, the medium, and the large. The large one is good for up to 75 enclosures. I actually use a couple of those, and they're awesome. But I would recommend to get the medium one, even if you're just going to hook up a couple to them. Definitely go for that medium size. It's maybe $10 more, or you know whatever the difference is. It is absolutely worth it. Now, there's actually something interesting that you mentioned just now. It's actually very important. You were talking about specimens, right? And you don't know how many enclosures you would need. It's just so important I'm just going to like dive right in. So with dart frogs, you know, you have different species. Now, the reason why there's so many, there's actually over 200 different kinds of dart frogs, believe it or not. The reason why there's so many is because they can't swim. So through, you know, the hundreds, thousands of years, they've been separated by streams and rivers, right? So in their natural habitat, they're all separate. So now in the hobby, we're very adamant about respecting that and keeping them separate, right? Mm-hmm. So the amount of enclosures you would need would actually depend on the different species you have, right? Mm-hmm. So mixed tanks are not a good idea for a bajillion reasons, but you actually don't miss out on anything at all by having one species per enclosure.
Okay. So what is the best, since you brought up the species and how they're separated by streams and rivers, what is the best species to begin with? Because I know, obviously, with any type of reptile or amphibian that you get, there are always those species that are easy to care for, and there are always those species that are extremely hard and for the expert to care for. So what is the best species for somebody to get into?
All right, that's a really good question. I get asked that a lot, actually. And so I've concluded that there are three main species that are the absolute best. All three of them are going to be very bold. You're going to see them a lot. Two of the three call, so you'll hear them, which is awesome. They're very hardy. They're very forgiving of, you know, maybe not misting enough or not feeding enough until you kind of get the hang of it. So the three that I've gone to are Dendrobates leucomelus, which is the one commonly known as the bumblebee dart frog, which nicknames aren't a good thing to go by with dart frogs. We usually use species names. So Dendrobates leucomelus, it's like that yellow-black one. They are awesome. And then Santa Isabels, Epipedobates, Anthony Santa Isabels are the ones that I have, but pretty much any Epipedobates, I don't really know how to say that, but I normally just read it. But so they're great. They're actually calling right now. And then the third kind is Dendrobates tinctorius, any kind of tinctorius, but Dendrobates tinctorius.
All right. So what is the best thing about dart frogs that will keep you going no matter what happens?
What do you mean?
What is that one factor about keeping dart frogs that you love so much that will just always keep you going?
Well, first of all, they're beautiful. Their colors never, ever cease to amaze me. Second of all, they're very low maintenance, believe it or not. Other than that weekly fly culturing, they're super low maintenance. Once they're hooked up to a misting system, you hook up their lights to timers, and literally all you're doing is feeding them a couple of times a week and taking a billion pictures like I do. So once you automize everything, then you can, it's one of my favorite things. I just kind of, And they're very conducive to that, especially the three above that I mentioned. They're very bold. I'm talking always out, and they know when it's feeding day, so they will literally sit by the front glass and wait for me to come and feed them.
Wow, my dog doesn't even do that. You have to chase him down to go eat food. I don't know what's wrong with that little critter.
Right? Yeah, dart frogs, they know, especially Dendrobates tinctorius. They're like little puppies.
Oh, man, that's pretty cool. So I want to get into obtaining dart frogs. So I know that a lot of people must have burning questions because dart frogs aren't really seen in your local mom-and-pop pet stores. Of course, I don't really advertise for Petco and PetSmart, but I'll say mom-and-pop pet stores. You're not really seeing them. So where's the best place to get dart frogs, or where have you gotten your dart frogs?
All right, so pretty much the best place to – okay, so dart frogs are, like I mentioned before, a very, very specific niche. Now, that means that there's a lot more of us than you would think that have a pretty large – and breeding is kind of an inevitable side effect of keeping dart frogs well over a long period of time. So pretty much anybody that keeps them will inevitably breed them. The best place to get them is from fellow hobbyists, you know. Okay. You kind of build relationships. You end up finding friends and mentors in fellow hobbyists. Actually a third of my collection came from a friend of mine who essentially mentored me in the beginning of my keeping, and he taught me how to set up the enclosures, how to do backgrounds. Just he gave me all these tips, and he would give me sweet deals on dart frogs, you know, and I would kind of get dibs on the good stuff. So it's pretty much like the best place. Now, I have found that finding local Facebook groups are okay. An excellent, like, Facebook groups are the way to go right now for anything you want to find.
Of course.
You can pretty much find a breeder for whatever you want, or somebody who knows somebody, you know? So for, to find anything, that's kind of the best way to go. Now you also have the option of the bigger company breeders like Josh's Frogs or Dart Frog Connection. I know that Josh's Frogs has an excellent quality. So if you don't know anybody local or you can't, you know, find anybody, definitely go for Josh's Frogs. They pretty much have everything you would need from the enclosure to all of the, you know, the layers and the substrate and the wood and the lighting and literally anything and everything. They'll sell it.
Great. So I want to, since you talked about enclosures, what are the enclosures that you use? Do you use ExoTerra? Do you use the traditional just plain ZooMed enclosures, glass enclosures? What do you use?
I personally love ExoTerras. I find the double front doors to be just absolutely above and beyond. I don't recommend the traditional kind of fish tank enclosures. A lot of dart frogs hang up on the top, so you don't really want them to be hanging out on the lid where you have to open all the time.
Of course.
And it makes it really inconvenient to go in and trim plants or to add or take away stuff. So terras are awesome. I do have some people that complain about maybe like fruit flies escaping, but I don't really find that to be a deal breaker, to be honest. I enjoy the fact that there's double doors. So if you're ever afraid of the dart frog jumping out, especially in the beginning until you get to know them and you kind of, you know, like each individual, you'll know if one of them likes to come out more or, you know, whatever. Being able to have one door closed while you open the other one to feed them or to work or whatever, it is so valuable.
All right.
But I do use ZooMeds as well, so they're all good.
So, yeah, of course. So I know that you have other species or specimens besides the poison dart frog. So do you mind telling us what else you keep?
Yeah, absolutely. So pretty much what I did is I got into dart frogs, and once I had pretty much my entire living room full, I was like, you know what? I'm going to get into day geckos. yeah, you should see my house. So I was like, so I went into day geckos because they have kind of a similar care. They have different enclosure requirements, but in terms of care, I fit them kind of into the same feeding schedule, which is super convenient.
Okay.
So I have several species of day geckos, I think about maybe five species. So I have an entire room full of those. I keep a bunch of panther chameleons. I love panther chameleons. I also keep, they're all watching me right now, by the way. I have a room full of chameleons that are watching me. I keep Chameleolus barbatus, which are they're an anole. Or they're from the anole family. They're very chameleon-like, and they're from Cuba, so they're nicknamed the Cuban false chameleon. Yeah, that's what they are. They're awesome. I breed them as well. I actually have my bedroom full of Chameleolus. I also have crested geckos, gargoyle geckos. I have some Abronia. I have Vietnamese mossy frogs. I have Atelopus, which are a toad from Suriname, but they're actually very dart frog-like and have the exact same requirements. I keep bumblebee toads. I could go on and on, but I'll stop there.
All right. No problem. So since we've touched base on all these different type of animals, something just popped up into my mind, and that is plants. And I know those are very important when you're trying to create a perfect vivarium for the poison dart frogs or for some other amphibians. So what goes into your care for plants, and how do you choose your plants since there's
so
many
types? That's a great question. Thanks for asking that. So for dart frogs, we know that they live in a rainforest kind of environment, which means that they need high humidity. So when you're looking for plants for dart frogs, you want to look for tropical plants. Now, you can go to big stores like Home Depot, Lowe's, or any nursery, and you just ask for tropical plants. Now, these are plants that are going to take high humidity, high moisture, et cetera, because dart frogs do require daily misting. And if you have a misting system set up, then you put that baby on 2 or 3 times a day, you know, just to maintain that that humidity. I have my mister go off 4 times a day for my darts. So those plants are very important. Depending on the kind of dart frog you have is, or, you know, the size, is kind of the plants that you want to get for them. So the bigger dart frogs, they kind of like bigger leaves that they can actually sit on. But usually the bigger ones are more terrestrial. So you kind of want something bigger, if you will. The smaller dart frogs, like Rinitamea and Pumilio, they definitely love bromeliads. Like, the more, the better. And I actually just zip tie bromeliads onto wood.
Okay.
So it's super easy to apply them.
All right. So, in regards to lighting for your plants in particular, how do you go about lighting for the plants?
Lighting. Oh, that's another good question. I like to use LEDs because they use low
LEDs.
Electricity. What you're pretty much looking for is plant growth. You don't want something that gets hot because dart frogs need to live in room temperature between 72 and 76 degrees. So you don't want something that gets hot. But I usually look for, to be honest, planted aquarium light. So any lights that are geared towards planted aquariums, they're awesome. That's actually what I use. But I do know that they do sell like jungle lights and et cetera, et cetera. So those are great. And, you know, bromeliads, that's actually a really important thing. I want to go back to that just for a second. Bromeliads are super crucial to dart frogs. They keep moisture inside them. Right. So the dart frogs will actually, they live in bromeliads. They like to, they like to hang out in them. They like to sleep in them. They like to poop in them. They like to lay eggs on them.
Wow.
They will even their tadpoles will live inside bromeliads. That's why I said the more, the better. Like Pumilio, for example, the more bromeliads that you give them, the more babies that they can actually have. And I get a lot of my bromeliads from Michael's Bromeliads. They like sell online and stuff. They have vivarium packages. They're located down here in Venice, Florida, but they're awesome. Super high quality bromeliads. But
that's great. Yeah, so let's do a little recap. So I just want to make everybody clear on what your expectations are for your vivariums. So would you mind giving us a quick rundown on what makes a perfect vivarium for the perfect setup for a poison dart frog in particular?
All right. So for the poison dart frog vivarium, it's crucial to have the substrate layers, which is the false bottom, the screen, the ABG mix, the sphagnum moss, and leaf litter. I like to use oak leaves, but any vivarium leaf litter works. And then plants, wood is pretty much the skeleton of the enclosures. I always like to get some really nice pieces of wood, set them up inside the tank. Once I have all the substrate layers, I put some wood in, and then I'll plant around the wood. So then the plants have kind of a chance to go, you know, on and around it and et cetera, et cetera. So it's pretty much the bones of the enclosure.
Okay.
It's also very important to have a glass lid. Now, if you have like a Zoomit or an Exoterra that has that screen lid, some people will, or like me, I'll just put glass on top of the screen. This will rust over time, like, you know, long time, you know, several years down the road, you may have rust. The correct way to do it is to remove the screen and just to silicone the glass in. Lowe's will actually custom cut glass, or if you have, you know, like a local business that does it, even better. So you pretty much get glass. What's that other material called? Light glass, but it's kind of plastic.
Plexiglass?
Yes, plexiglass. Thank you. It warps over time, so you don't want to use plexiglass. You definitely want to go for a glass. That is a crucial part of maintaining the humidity in the enclosure. You only want something like 10 to 15, maybe even 20% ventilation on top. But probably okay. like 10, 15% is more than enough. So that's pretty much all you need. Sounds like a lot, but the beauty about vivariums is that once you take the time to set them up, they're good for years.
Mm-hmm. All right. So obviously I know you've set up a lot of vivariums over the years. So for somebody to get into keeping multiple specimens of the poison dart frogs, how much money would you recommend setting aside for the upkeep, let's say on a monthly basis, starting from nothing?
Starting from nothing. Okay, so an average enclosure has cost me between $300 and $500, depending on the size. Okay. An average, like, let's say 18 by 18 by 24 Exoterra. That's about $100. You can get them cheaper, used on Craigslist. People put them up all the time. Or reptile shows will have really good deals on them. So that's kind of a big chunk of it. And then you maybe spend, let's say, $100 to $150, like, top on all the stuff that goes inside, all of the substrate materials, the plants, the wood, let's say the lights as well for, like, one enclosure, and then the frogs. So I guess it depends on, you know, the kind of frog you want. So something, like, I guess you could get by between, like, $300-$400, but it's so worth it.
Definitely. All right, Stefania, so where can people find you online to ask you more questions or just to keep up with you?
So the main place that I post is on Instagram. It is a very simple platform, and it's very intimate. So I'm able to, people are able to message me directly, and I do all the posts myself. I actually do everything by myself. So people are able to reach out to me directly through there, through like direct messaging. That's actually the best place to go ahead and message me. Also, I have a YouTube channel due to high demand. I've had so many requests to have a YouTube channel that I finally gave in. I opened one and I've been kind of posting video tutorials. I've been keeping these animals for several years, I've been able to kind of fine tune exact equations. So that's kind of what I share.
All right.
Well as like daily feedings and stuff.
Okay. So we thank you so, so much for coming on the show and taking some time out of your, I'm pretty sure, heavily scheduled day just to sit down and talk to us and expand our minds on poison dart frogs, because I think that's what we focused on tonight. So we hope to have you back on the show sometime soon.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Have a great night.
You too.
All right, that does it for us, folks. We have been having a great show tonight, so I don't want to end it on a bad note or anything like that, so I'm going to keep it short and sweet. So next week, don't forget to tune in to Empire State Reptiles Live. We have a very special guest on the show that will be announced on Instagram and on our text message remind platform. And please, please, please do not forget to check out our website where you can find all the on-demand episodes. So that means all the episodes that are previously recorded and that I like so much that I put them on the website. So you can go listen to them right through there and just have some great time and sit back and relax and enjoy the show. I know that I want to give a shout out to one of our super fans, Melissa. She listens to our show every day on her way to work in her car. She hooks up her phone right to the car, Bluetooth, or I don't know how she does it. But she listens to us every day on the way to work. So I thank you so much, Melissa, for sending me that video. That really made our day over here. So with that being said, I think that is it. I don't have any other announcements to make besides the fact that, like I said before, Morgan will be helping us out occasionally with the shows, especially as I gear up and get ready to take a couple vacations over the summer. So For now, we're going on a cruise. I think we're going on a cruise. Norwegian Breakaway once again. For anybody that was following us last summer, you know that we have an annual cruise. So we decided to leave right from New York City once again and board the Norwegian Breakaway. And I think we're going on a second cruise on the Anthem of the Seas, which leads from New Jersey. So I know you guys don't really care that much, but I just felt the need to share that with you. So once again, thank you so much for tuning into Empire State Reptiles Live. Your contributions by tuning in to the show is greatly appreciated. We love you so much, and we hope to see you here next week.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them blue for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, much more than I ever knew. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world.